It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Wisconsin is home to about 16 million acres of forest.
Most of Wisconsin's trees are considered relatively young since they were planted after the cutover period of the late 19th century, which nearly eradicated certain species, like the white pine.
Now the state's forests face new threats brought on by climate change and invasive species.
Oak trees are declining due to spongy moth, and ash trees throughout the state are under threat from the emerald ash borer.
And wind events like this year's tornadoes can blow down trees that may have been growing for more than a century, leaving the forest damaged and more susceptible to disease.
Later, we'll hear from tribal foresters working in northeastern Wisconsin, where Menominee Tribal Enterprises, or MTE, oversees the Menominee Forest.
First, trees are also a big part of the state's economy. Forest products are the second biggest industry output in Wisconsin. Harry Schinnebeck is executive director of the Great Lakes Timber Professionals Association based in Rhinelander. Before that, he was self-employed as a third-generation logger and trucker for more than 30 years. Henry, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, you're welcome. Happy to be here.
Now, we got about 16 million plus or minus acres of forests around Wisconsin. Big picture, how important are all these trees to the state's ecosystem and economy?
Well, it's, you know, as you know, the forest industry is the number two industry in the state of Wisconsin. And for us, trees are extremely valuable, extremely important. You know, I think it's cool that we've never run out of trees and never will. And that's part of our mission, is to make sure that we never run out of trees. A lot of our members are third, fourth, fifth, even getting into sixth generation now of forest management. And I would say that Wisconsin, I would put our forest up against anybody in the world as far as being sustainable and well-managed. You know, we're no longer in the 18, 1900s. We've learned a lot since then. And, you know, everything revolves around the trees. It's the recreation we have, the wildlife habitat, clean air, clean water, all the things that we enjoy as a society. In addition, and the way that we make that happen and keep our forest healthy is through forest management.
Yeah, that forest management concept, people might think, hey, forests, they're natural. Let's just let them all grow, right? And we don't need to intervene. What is happening in forest management that you see is key to maintaining healthy forests for the state?
You know, we've got a lot of certification systems. We've got Sustainable Forestry Initiative. We have Forest Stewardship Council certification, those kinds of things. And that's kind of a check and balance that we use for our, you know, as part of our association, we do all of the SFI training for loggers. And that means that if you wanted to become a logger, you're going to have to first learn about best management practices for water quality, endangered species, invasive species, areas of high conservation value. You're going to need to know all those things before you start going out and doing forest management. And all of our forest management has a plan. Everything we do has a plan behind it. And, you know, again, we want to make sure that we keep the forest healthy, because that provides all those other services. And having a vibrant industry, we're very fortunate in this part of the country that we still have industry left that can absorb the wood that we're growing. It's like your garden. You have to, you know, you have to take care of it. You have to weed it out, so to speak. And we're always looking to grow higher value trees. And people are very dependent on forest products, whether they realize it or not, because it's in a lot of products, not only lumber for houses and windows and those kinds of things, but there's ice cream sweeteners, there's cardboard that has your Culver's hamburger in it, there's paper. There's just so many products. We've learned so much as far as, you know, how we can utilize all those products and how we can use every bit of the tree to help us have a better life.
Now, in that management, what are some of the worries? What are some of the bad things that can happen, as you see it, if we aren't doing some selective, sustainable harvesting of wood?
Well, the forest becomes overcrowded. You know, I know that you have some of your guests on. MTE is a awesome example of forest management, the way that they've done it, starting back with Chief Oshkosh, and I think a lot of us have learned from that. But we have to take care of the forest. We need to take out, you know, we have a lot of invasive species now, like oak wilt, heterobsidian root rot, Dutch elm disease, those kinds of things. And we very rarely can stop them, but we can certainly mitigate their spread by doing proper forest management and having times of the year when we can manage certain species and when we don't manage certain species to control their spread.
You mentioned the paper industry, still important in Wisconsin, but many communities know they've lost their paper mills in the last couple decades. How has that impacted the forest industry in the state?
Well, what we're seeing right now, according to forest inventory analysis, and that's kind of a longstanding measurement of how many trees we're growing, we're actually seeing that our natural mortality is exceeding harvest rates, and that's not a good thing. Some natural mortality is good, but if that continues, if we continue to lose markets and forest health starts declining even more than it is, we have a very good potential for more fires because nature will take care of itself.
Henry, thanks again for joining us today.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
That was Henry Schinnenbeck, Executive Director of the Great Lakes Timber Professionals Association, based in Rhinelander. We've been talking about challenges to maintaining Wisconsin forests and why the health of trees matters for the environment and the state's economy. Now we head to northeastern Wisconsin, where tribes have been at the forefront of sustainable forestry practices. Chris Caldwell is president of the College of Menominee Nation, and Paul Cole is forest manager for the Stockridge Muncie community. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, hi, thanks for having us.
And Chris, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, good to be here, Rob.
Chris, the Menominee Forest, it's a one-of-a-kind in Wisconsin, maybe the world. What makes this forest unique?
Oh, man. I would say a lot of things in describing it, but mostly that we as a people, Menominee people, continue to maintain our relationship with the forest. And so it's carried us through a lot of different times and changes prior to contact, through contact, European contact, American settler periods, and even now as we derive a living from it within our communities.
And Paul, you oversee a younger forest just southwest of the Menominee Reservation. What does forestry management look like for the Stockbridge Muncie tribe?
The forest management here in the Stockbridge Muncie community is pretty important and pretty ingrained into the community. Management here is pretty typical of northern Wisconsin across jurisdictional boundaries kind of thing. So just doing basic things, ecological management across the landscape, trying to make a healthy, resilient forest for the future.
And Chris, the Menominee Nation, known for its sustainable forestry processes. Henry mentioned it, actually. Tell us a little bit about your tribe's approach to managing the forest.
Yeah, so my just kind of context, my background is in forestry, but I currently serve as president of the College of Menominee Nation. But, you know, that's a pretty close connection in terms of the type of work we do here. It's future forward thinking, taking care of our trees, taking care of our students. I see it as one in the same, just different acronyms and other things we use to accomplish it. But when it comes to the Menominee Forest, we've always approached it as a relational thing. So we as a people have a responsibility to the forest because we know if we take care of it, it will take care of us. And when I say that, that relation has carried from pre-contact to present day, that relationship is always there, but it's just changing in terms of how we go about doing that. And it extends from, like previously was mentioned, Chief Oshkosh, the management philosophy he expressed of starting in the rising sun, cutting to the setting sun, and when you reach the end, start over again, cutting only the mature, sick and down trees. And that way the trees will last forever. And so that philosophy carries a Menominee worldview that continues, and it actually shapes how we determine what modern silvicultural techniques or GIS mapping tools or other things that our Menominee Tribal Enterprises brings in to carry out the operational management of the forest. So that connected philosophy operation is an extension of our people's responsibility that we carry.
Paul, what are the top challenges you're facing now when it comes to managing the forests?
Top challenges, man, there's so many right now. I think one of the big ones that we've been fighting the last few years or really working hard on is invasive species. They're coming in from all sides, and whether it's invasive shrubs or herbs or insects or diseases, we're constantly finding new ones and trying to deal with them so that the trees have all the resources they need to succeed. So that's a huge one. The other one is shift in how the climate and the weather is working. So, you know, we're seeing wind events that are far more extreme and more frequent than we've had in the past. And that's been a huge deal. I mean, the forests of northern Wisconsin and in the Midwest are the basic disturbance regime is wind events. So our forests are very adapted to this, but the frequency and the intensity has seemed to change over the last few decades. So, you know, as much as we'd like to be doing our normal management techniques, a lot of times we seem to be just chasing storms and fighting invasives.
And Paul, is there kind of a compounding effect where a forest that's suffering from invasive species might be more vulnerable to wind? Trees damaged by wind might be more vulnerable to invasive species?
Absolutely. They can definitely compound. I mean, some of the big parts of getting in and dealing with wind events and damaged trees like that is, you know, invasive species are going to take over those sites that are disturbed, or insects are going to get in and really, you know, build up populations in that wounded wood or in that damaged timber. So you can get some really big spikes in insects. You can really introduce a lot of invasive species when you have events like that, or vice versa. So yeah, they compound a lot.
On the cultural side of things, we recently spoke with Red Cliff elder Marvin Defoe, who's a master birch bark canoe builder. Here's some of what he had to say.
It's getting harder and harder today, gathering the materials for the canoe. These last 2 years have been very difficult gathering birch bark. Because the birch trees are dying, the climate is changing, the trees are dying, and it's getting very difficult.
Chris, what kind of impact would a loss of trees have on Menominee culture and traditions?
Yeah, just to kind of point to one thing is that at Menominee, one of the primary strategic forestry goals has been maintaining the diversity of native species and habitats. And that's always been described as the strength of the forest. And so if you have those compounding effects like climate and invasives that, like garlic mustard, that take over whole plant communities, replace them, you know, you start reducing the level of diversity present and thereby reducing the strength of the forest overall. But when it comes to individual species of trees or plants that are used for cultural and medicinal activities, it can range from just like the elder said, that it makes it harder to find good material to make things like birch bark canoes, or in the case of emerald ash borer, where it's starting to decimate the white ash trees that our basket makers use, you know, it creates a requirement to, and what Menominee is doing is seed saving, but also cutting ash trees to store for future use for basket making, and then even processing some of that just so, you know, we have the materials on hand while we try to figure out how will we access those materials in the future. And the others are like maple sugar season is kind of in flux. It doesn't always happen around when people expect it. And that's also could be an indicator of an impact on our language. So as we seek to reclaim our language, it's based on observance of natural processes and timing of seasons. And so if those start changing, then the question is, what do you do with the language? Change it to reflect what we see today? Or does that become such a rapid change we have to think about how to phrase uncertainty and climate change and other concepts like that into language revitalization. So they're pretty complex, just across forest management and social and cultural activities.
Paul, I want to ask about the timeline here. Trees don't grow on human command. A hardwood can be, you know, over a century to grow to where you could harvest it. What does thinking along those timelines do to shape your work in as a forester?
Trees don't live in the same time frame as us. So it's very difficult sometimes to talk about because, you know, we're looking at management techniques that, you know, maybe we carry out, you know, this year, and we really won't see the effects or how it went for 30, 40, 50, 100 years from now. So it's a really big picture thing, and we have to use a lot of historic knowledge and science behind it that says, hey, you know, this happened before with these new constraints of climate change or invasive species. We expect this to happen. And, you know, we use models and a lot of things like that, too. But looking at the big long time scale is very important. It also can be very difficult when you're trying to explain this to maybe somebody that's not as familiar with forestry and forestry practices. Is, you know, it takes a lot longer than us, and we want to see things very quickly, and the forest doesn't really care.
That's interesting. And Chris, with that in mind, at the College of Menominee Nation, you're working with young people and introducing them to some of these concepts. What are you seeing as you bring up the next generation of forest managers?
Yeah, definitely. Looking for ways and strategies for showing the next generation of leaders and foresters and practitioners that it's not just a job you clock into. There is that cultural connection. So there's a deeper sense of responsibility beyond just, you know, putting in your hours on the job. But there's a lot of intrinsic value that's carried with, you know, whether it's a tribal member working on the forest or at the sawmill, supporting the forest, sustainable forestry goals and operations, or even if it's someone not from Menominee working for us on the forest, it's helping all of those people to understand that importance. And so our partnership between the college and Menominee Tribal Enterprises seeks to not just help them develop their workforce, but ensure that they're technically sound, that they understand the cultural importance of the work being done, and that they are able to develop in that manner so that, you know, the work we do today continues far into the future, like Paul was saying.
Paul, thanks again for being with us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And Chris, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks.
That was Paul Cole, forest manager for the Stockbridge-Munsee community, and Chris Caldwell, president of the College of Menominee Nation. Earlier, we heard from Henry Schinnebeck from the Great Lakes Timber Professionals Association. They're talking about recent challenges to sustainable forest management practices, why the health of trees is important for Wisconsin's environment, culture, and economy.